Official Jets podcast is presented by WynnBET. Betting is a team sport, but together at WynnBET, we have a monster pot on tap today. We're going to start with Bart Scott and Brian Baldinger. Chris Long is up next in a few moments as well.
He has a few things to say.
Oh, yeah. He's really high on the Jets defense. Also, I know a lot of people out there high on the Jets podcast. So subscribe, rate, and review not only where you're getting your podcast audio-wise, but also subscribe on YouTube or bang that like button. Okay, fellas, Jets, Bills this weekend. Kind of feels like a desperation game or an elimination game in terms of the postseason.
I mean, you look at the field is wide open now, right? Even the Raiders have to feel like they have life and the opportunity to actually, you know, make a run for one of these last spots in a wild card. So with that being said, nobody's going to lay down. Everybody believes they have a real chance. And you have to start winning. November, December is when you make the dash for the cash. And it's when the cream rises to the top. And a lot of these teams that are fighting are going to start playing each other. And it's going to be who can make those moments and have these small victories, win these battles so they can hopefully win the war to be able to get in the tournament.
Both these teams are scuffling when you're talking about the Bills and the Jets right now, especially on the offensive side of the ball for the Jets. Where you look at the Bills, I mean, they're dealing with a lot of things on all three levels, but they made a change at the offensive coordinator position. No more Ken Dorsey. Joe Brady steps in.
You know, winning cures everything. There's nothing like winning. So all the noise goes away as soon as you win a game. If you win two games, it's like you never heard it. And it's just the season every year, the teams that were good at the beginning, like, or the teams that were bad at the beginning, like Denver was bad in the beginning, horrible, right? Minnesota was bad at the beginning. Look at these teams right now. They're all ascending. So you never know when it's going to turn and what turns it. It could be a play, it could be a game, it could be a moment, but things can turn. And so you always have to stay positive. Mm-hmm. There's always opportunities to win these games. There was last week against the Raiders, there was opportunities to win. You get the ball at the 2-yard line, you got to score. Like, it's just that simple. It doesn't matter who the coordinator is, who the offensive line is. The ball's at the 2-yard line, you got to score a touchdown.
Right.
And so teams are struggling when you can't do that or when you're turning it over the way Buffalo's turning it over. Somebody's got to be the fall guy. That's what Sean McDermott did. He's like, we can't allow this to go any further. So we're going to make this drastic change. We're going to elevate this guy, and we'll see. We'll see. Like, they got their fingers crossed if the mistakes can go away right
this
now.
This is a nightmare matchup for the Bills because the Jets have always matched up well with them from a defensive angle. And now you got a sputtering offense. And the first game up for the new coordinator is against the Jets.
Yeah, well, the crazy thing is, right, you know, Buffalo and Josh Allen's always been a turnover machine. The issue was the defense was always there to bail them out and create opportunities and get turnovers. Remember, a couple of years ago, this was the number one defense in the league, right, and didn't give up big plays. And then look what they did early on against a team like Miami. But it's a battle of attrition. When you think about an NFL season, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And, you know, people are going to get hurt, and some injuries have greater impact than others. I think Milano, who was playing at an all-pro, you know, before Quincy Williams came out and started doing his thing, Milano was playing the best linebacker, maybe in the AFC by himself. He gets hurt. Yep. Tre'Davious White gets hurt. And then it's a trickle-down effect, and then you have to try and play differently. You can't call your plays the way you were built. Von Miller hasn't come back and been the player that they thought. And so, like, now they're sputtering. So now if you're the Jets, if you continue to generate turnovers and get the ball and short fields and make big plays and get off the field, they don't have that defense where maybe the offense can play the field position, get some big plays, because there are opportunities to get had. You just have to identify the matchups that you have, and you have to exploit them every time, right?
Robert Saleh said there's going to be changes on the offensive side of the ball. It's not going to be at the quarterback position. It's not going to be the guy calling the signals. We saw early this week the Jets release Michael Carter, veteran running back, who took on a third down role for this team. Do you think we're going to see Izzy Abanaconda not only active, but getting some opportunities with the ball? Because you got a big dog in that backfield with Breece Hall already, and Dalvin Cook showed some juice.
You got to put your playmakers on the field.
Okay.
And we believe what we saw from Izzy in the preseason, that this guy, and then you just watch him at Pitt. You got to put the ball in his hands and give him a chance. You'll never know what he can or cannot do until he carries the ball. And so I think there's going to be opportunities. They have run the ball well against Buffalo. They did last year when they beat him.
Yep.
Like, they got to lean on that. But any way that you can get Breece, Izzy, like the ball in space or just touches. We might see that explosiveness.
Yeah.
They score from 50 yards away a lot better than they score from 2 yards away sometimes. And a lot of teams do. So let's see what he can do. You know, something about a rookie, they don't know what they don't know. Like, but he's fast.
Yeah.
He's fast and he knows how to finish.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see him.
He's an awesome system fit too.
I love this, you know, because when you think about it, listen, if I'm the Jets, we got 70 plays in the game, 40 are going to be runs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be explosive runs, but they're body blows, right? Remember what this team, you know, in the 2009 and 2010 were, right? They're a team that breaks you down, right? You're talking about it, you're going against a defense that has a lot of injured players. The last thing they want to do is to be in car wrecks over and over and over again. And that levy usually breaks in the second half. And I love the fact that you can bring a young guy, much like when we brought Sean Green,
mm-hmm.
when remember, Thomas Jones was leading the league in rushing. But who was the finisher and who was mm-hmm. the spark in the postseason? It was Sean Green because he had fresh legs.
Mm-hmm.
Not only do you have Izzy who has fresh legs, you also have Dalvin Cook who has fresh legs who looked like he was, you know, popping out of his skin last week.
Yeah, so juice.
Right, so continue to get those. Because those 1 and 2 yard runs in the first quarter becomes – you know, 2 to 3 in the second quarter, they become 4 to 5 or big plays. Or we've seen big plays from Brees early on if guys aren't stretched out. Listen, it's going to be cold. And if you can get guys to have to put them hamstrings to the test early on, they're not stretched out. You know, it's opportunities to beat guys as they're not warmed up yet. And you got these young backs and you just throwing them at them. It's like not getting a break and having double doubles, right? When you look at what the Raiders did, they said, we're going to get movement. We're not going to allow guys to get penetration. I think about going against a guy like Ed Oliver. I love Ed Oliver. I thought they should have drafted him. I was a big fan of his when he came out. He's a one-gap penetrator. He's a light player. I will trap him and wham block him to death.
Yeah.
Because he's going to get up the field. Right. I will trap and block him and run the ball downhill at these inexperienced mm-hmm. linebackers and wear their ass down.
Yeah, Linville Joseph, he can't play 50 snaps. I mean, he just came in and off the street.
You get a guy like Linville Joseph.
Yep.
And you're playing this up-tempo. See, the problem is the Jets never get to the line of scrimmage where they can figure out the answers to the test. They're usually getting out the huddle at 14 and get to the line of scrimmage. And then if I'm a defender, I'm looking at the clock. And I'm like, okay, no matter what, if I get a Caden and it's within 3 seconds, I know it has to be on this Caden. So I'm getting out. When you look at what other teams do, they get their muddle huddles, they get there, and they may not have the play yet. But you can talk to the quarterback up to 15 seconds.
Right.
Get these guys to the line of scrimmage, smoke these guys out with dummy plays. Now, that takes discipline, but that's going to let you see where the blitz is coming from. And then it also allows your coordinator to talk to you and say, hey, check to this. Mm-hmm. That's the game within the game. You see Justin Herbert do it all the time. You see some of the better quarterbacks all the time. They get as soon as the play over, it's not a hurry up. But if you get to the line of scrimmage,
well, you have more time to read the box.
Yes.
Are we going to run this run?
And you got defenders. I mean, listen, Peyton's do it to us all the time.
Yeah.
You got guys fat.
Yeah.
320 pounds plus. They're sitting in a stance. It's like doing a wall sit. For 16 to 17 seconds.
And if that drive
goes 8 plays, thighs are burning. What kind of a pass rush you think you got? If you're sitting there, you see guys, they be in a 3-point, then they finally take a knee and look up like, damn, what's going on? Then they come back down, right? Motion shifts. But as a lineman, you're in the 2-point stands. You're chilling. You're so good with that.
I was watching Buffalo's game in the loss to Denver, and Linville Joseph is out there.
Yeah.
So he's the biggest guy on the field right now. You know, I don't know what kind of shape Linval's in. He's always been a big guy. But you got to test it. Like, he's the one, like, he's there to stop the run. He's going to sit on a zero technique and be right on top of Joe Tippmann. And you just wonder, like, if you run almost like what Bart's saying, if you go up tempo and you're having some success running the ball and you keep him on the field, like, that gas is going out of that tank pretty fast. Like, you got to get you.
So now you burping the baby, right? Just think. All you have to do is get one first down. Like, great pass rushers, they got about 4 good pass rushes before, like, they done.
Yeah.
And a guy like Linville Joseph, so now you're basically playing against 3 instead of 4.
Right.
Because now you can man him up. Like, guys used to do that all the time. You try and get, like, Chris Jenkins. You try and get Vince Wilfork. You want to no huddle, no temple them and get them stuck where they can't run out to try and change. And you know what their counter is going to be? Lobster.
Sure.
Right? But you only get lobster so many times. Somebody's going to fake an injury. But that's how you know you got them. Somebody's going to go down, oh, my arm, oh, my leg. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And they're going to try and do it early. But then you can't keep doing that. You get one or two times to do lobster. So I'll catch his own air game. Like, yup, yeah, fat boy, we're going to test your cardio today.
Speaking of the guys in the middle, you like what you've seen here from Joe Tippmann. Not only back as far as the whole portfolio going back to early in the season, but you think he's been playing very well at center here.
He's such a good player, man. And like to be that tall, like guys think they can just run through him. But they don't realize that weight comes with height. But also, like I forgot the great philosopher to say, give me a lever big enough and I'll move the world off its axis. Because he plays with
Aristotle,
such...
Aristotle, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, maybe yeah. So he plays with such leverage that when those feet are anchored, he's able to hold bigger guys off and he sticks to them because of that height and he knows how to use his height with the right angle. Now, sometimes he may get ahead of his ski sometimes, but when he got you and he's able to bend, you might get him back 1-2, but after that, those feet are stuck in the ground.
It's his natural position.
Yeah.
I mean, he was drafted to be a center. I mean, he was forced into playing right guard because of the situation. But this is what they drafted him to be, the long-term answer at center, whether it's, you know, that's what Nick Mangold was. You know, you go back in the history of
Kevin
the Jets.
Kevin
Kevin. Like, they've had great centers here. Like, I think he could be in that tradition of guys that have come through here and played a long time and at a high level.
What do you make of Becton after 9 games now? A lot of people were wondering, hey, could he make it through 9 snaps now?
I thought he was awesome against the Chargers. Yeah. Like, he's going up against Bosa, Mack. He eliminated him. He didn't have a bad set. I thought last week he had Speed some plays rushes, where he'd like to have him back. Mm. I think he's just frustrated. Like, I think they should run behind him.
Okay.
You know, that's what he does best. He moves people. So, I mean, I build my offense around running behind him.
Yes, that whole side. Him and Langton Thomas supposed to be
Langton,
that way.
Like, just work. And
pulling Tippmann front side.
Like, just be a left-handed team.
Yes.
Like, to me, that should be a strength of this team right now. Lean on it.
Yeah. My point at Becton is that nobody gave him a shot before the beginning of the season. They said, this guy's never going to do it in the National Football League. You got to give him a ton of credit for what he did body-wise. And then also, just coming out here, the Jets continue to shuffle in personnel left and right along the offensive line.
On the right side of the line.
And the one constant has been Becton.
And it's crazy, right? But you know what's crazy, right? Everybody knows, or people listening may or may not know, but you know, I come here and we shoot, you know, today, and then I go into that little room right there and I shoot my radio show. But as
shameless
I'm
plug ESPN New York, that's one to three.
Yeah. So as I'm shooting my radio show, the indoor facility is right behind me, and I'm looking out the window. And about 2 o'clock every time I'm here, I look out and I see Becton out there with the coach doing individual work. I see it every week. Now, this is week 9. I've seen it every week. So it's what you do in the dark comes to the light. Yep. So the fact that he's putting that work in, nobody else sees that. I see it. The coaches see it. Nobody else in the league sees that. Because it's not like he's there and it's like some other guys with him. It's him and a coach, and he's working on sets, and he's working on his technique. That's how you become a professional. You got to continue to sharpen the knife. And, you know, that's why he's able to stay healthy. That's why he's able to play at a high level. Does he struggle at times with certain types of rushers? Yes, right? But, you know, he's been playing super consistent, and this is a guy that we thought, oh, man, this guy's always hurt. He's in camp one practice. He's out the next. I think he's confident in his knee, and I think he feels confidence because he always believed that, you know, that injury would be protected if he played left tackle. Well, he's proven us wrong and proven himself right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bart wants tempo offensively. Zach Wilson, last week against the Raiders, became the sixth player in the National Football League this season to have 250 yards passing and 50 yards rushing in the same game. It's not like the Jets weren't moving the football against the Raiders. It was the missed opportunities in the first half, Baldy.
Opportunities, you know, in a game where it's basically you score a touchdown, you're going to win the game. I mean, it was really just that simple, just one touchdown. And that's what it's been like against a lot of teams, like Buffalo the first game against the Eagles. All they needed was a touchdown. They got a touchdown. So, you know, kicking field goals can be good, but I thought they moved the ball well enough to be able to finish these drives. And so I think there's almost a mental block.
You do.
Yeah. And they've got, you know, I think once they break the dam and they get through it and they score, I think they can score more frequently. It's just some kind of a block to, you know, the holding call on Breece Hall's touchdown. You know, just unfortunate things that do happen, but penalties happen because you're not in position. That's generally why penalties happen, especially holding calls. Your feet aren't in the right place. Your body is not in the right place. So, you know, it comes down to detailing your business.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, every single play can be that play with when you have Garrett Wilson and you have Breece Hall. You never know when one of those guys touching the ball can finish, you know, a long ways away.
And what was disappointing about that is that those penalties came from veterans.
Mm.
And, you know, you have to start holding your teammates accountable and understand that, you know, we brought you here to elevate our young quarterback. And you're hurting the team. And you have to understand, when you get a holding penalty down on 1 yard line, like, not all penalties are created equally, mm-hmm. right? You've got less field to work with. You're on the 1 yard line. Even if you miss your block, Breece Hall is good enough to make you right.
Yeah.
So, or Breece Hall, even if you do that and it's early in the down, it's first and goal, even if it's a tackle for a 1 yard gain, you still have 3 opportunities. But everything changes as far as play calling. If you get a holding penalty on the 1 yard line, it goes from, because it's no first down to get.
Mm-hmm.
It's either a touchdown or nothing.
Right.
And it's field goal or nothing. So you have to be smarter in situations. And I think that's where it's frustrating that they're getting in the red zone, but they're having concentration gaps and understanding. I can't get it here. I can't hold here. If he beats me, he beats me. I just got to stay connected to his body and know that I got a 220-pound back that can run through an hard tackle. So even if the guy's beating me, if I'm still on his left arm, he only has his right arm free. That's not enough to bring Breece down.
Mm.
So that's what you're talking about. You're talking about the football acumen and being a veteran team that doesn't beat yourself. Are you going to lose at times? Yes. But you have to understand when, you know, taking an L can still be a W if you don't, you know, make the Cardinals sin by giving us 15.
Don't try to do too much.
Yeah.
Bottom line. Yeah. Hey, so what about this little stretch here? Jets, Bills, Sunday. Then you get a couple days and you're back. First Black Friday game in NFL history, Miami, against the Dolphins.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing can swing in a hurry.
These division games, look, these division games count almost two.
Yep.
Because we've talked about this, you know, already. Like, if Buffalo loses this game, they're reeling.
Oh,
they're 5-6. They lose 2 in a row at home. The fans are turning on them. Like, this team had high expectations, all right? So you go in there and you beat Buffalo. You know, and we'll see what happens in Miami this weekend against the Raiders. It doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
We know that offense can be defended against good defenses. Kansas City has done it. Buffalo has done it. Philadelphia has done it. We've seen good defenses have slowed that offense down. So then it's a question of, can you get into some kind of rhythm for your offense? And that's really what this season is about right now. And I believe this. If the offense comes out, let's just say they take the opening drive and score, okay? And you kind of get rid of this block that I'm talking about. You know what that's going to do to the defense? Like, they're already playing hard, but they're just going to play that much harder. Like, we got an offense today. We got points. Like, we don't. It's hard to win games if you're not scoring points.
Yeah.
It's just hard. I don't care how good your defense is. So, but if you can score and you do that against Buffalo and win, the confidence in this building is going to change.
Yeah, when you think about, you know, getting a score, the defense can say, they're going to put on themselves, like, you know what? If we don't give up a score, we win.
Yeah.
Because we're going to also play the field position game. And understand what that does to Buffalo and the fan base. Quiets the crowd, allows you to hear, but also it deflates them, like, oh, here we go again. Because, listen, when you fire your coordinator, you're looking for somebody to blame. But if you get the same result and the Jets defense play up to their capabilities, then they run out of people to blame. So then now reality sets in because
they played their card.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the coordinator. It's us. We're not that good. And the realization that that window that opened 3 years ago when they had that tremendous game, playoff game against Kansas City, and they thought they were right there.
Right.
They have to come to the realization that we got old. And yes, windows open and close in this league when you have a great franchise quarterback like Josh Allen. But this version of the Buffalo Bills is closed. Gabe Davis could be gone next year. Diggs is a problem. They're stuck with him. He could become a malcontent. He becomes somebody that becomes a distraction. Yeah. They really can't run the football. You know, you got Deion Dawkins. You know, you got guys that are getting older. Spencer Brown's not a good player, right?
You got to wear him out.
Yeah,
you exactly. got to wear him out. Spencer, you got to make that right tackle.
He got to be the fish.
You got. Like, they should be lined up, wanting to go against him every time.
And the one Jet who probably doesn't get enough credit because what those young dudes have been doing is John Franklin Myers. John Franklin Myers historically has been a big issue for Spencer Brown because he bullies him.
Yeah.
So,
well, you can bully him or you can speed rush him.
Yeah.
You can get your way with him.
Yeah.
You know, they like him because he's a tough guy. He's a pretty decent run blocker.
Yeah.
But he's a liability in protection.
Yeah.
And so that's really like when they lose to Cincinnati, they lose to Cincinnati because they get beat up front. And Josh Allen is trying to play hero ball. Mm-hmm. He's trying to do too much because he has to and that's when he's guilty of making some turnovers.
It's just a fascinating matchup on so many levels, but it's interesting that the Bills did this move prior to playing the Jets defense as opposed to prior to playing the Broncos.
They couldn't waste any more time.
Yeah.
Time's running out.
Yeah. When you look at their schedule, when was a good day game to say, okay, against the Cowboys?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I think they still have the Eagles.
They have the Eagles next week.
Yeah, they have the toughest schedule remaining. So.
But if you're a Jets fan, aren't you excited about, okay, yeah, the offense, 8 touchdowns in 9 games, we know. We know about the problems as far as the penalties, but they moved the ball. They still got Breece Hall. They still got Garrett Wilson. You're going to see more young guys.
They need some juice. I'm excited to see what the shakeup's going to be.
Right.
Because they need more juice.
So what do you anticipate? So we talked about Izzy a little bit. Okay, let's end here before we get
Xavier.
To Chris.
I mean, can I see Bromley?
Okay.
I mean, hey, Alan Lazard, if you're not healthy, we got to sit you down. And we got to give somebody else an opportunity. They need somebody to step up opposite Garrett Wilson. You can't, because if I'm playing the Jets, I'm saying, listen, load the box, double Garrett Wilson, single up Alan Lazard. I got extra man in the box. I should be able to dominate. Somebody has to make somebody pay. The same way DJ Reed had to say, not on my watch, because people were going away from Sauce.
Sure.
We need somebody opposite, say, oh, you're going to disrespect me and man block me with your second best corner or in the slot. You're going to put your third best corner on me. You think I'm not going to win because you're putting extra resources to stop Garrett Wilson and an extra guy to stop Breece Hall? Okay. All right. I'm going to make you pay. Play me honest.
So I lied. I got one more for you, Baldy.
Mm-hmm.
Diggs got his. He got his numbers in week one because they moved him around because they knew, okay, playing the Jets.
They don't travel.
Yeah. So we got to make sure that we move him around. He got his. What's the counter this week on both sides? Because you know Josh Allen's going to try to keep Diggs engaged because if they don't get going early, he's going to be around.
So Bart's touched on it, but here's the problem.
Yeah.
And it's with all these, you know, number one wide receivers. If you say, okay, we got to make them happy.
Yeah.
The quarterback's job is to get it to the open receiver.
Right.
If you take Diggs out, whether you bang him at the line of scrimmage and you cloud him over the top, however you want to do it, and you eliminate him as a number one, and they got to go to Shakir or they got to go to Gabe Davis, and he's sulking, that's not Josh's fault. Josh's job.
And the Jets can do that.
You could do that. So, like, you hope that happens. But, you know, they made all this effort to get the ball to Devontae to start the game, which is fine. He was catching balls for 4 yards. Big deal. He got his catches. He wasn't hurting them. Then he's not beating them over the top.
Yeah.
You know, Diggs hurts you when he beats you over the top or he catches, you know, one of these dig routes and, you know, and he goes a long ways. He catches it on the run.
Can we throw some roses at the Jets' entire defense as far as what they're doing coverage-wise? Because you guys did a beautiful job. Jets game day, Robert Sala, CBS 730 or YouTube, NewYorkJets.com. You can check that out as far as just looking what they were doing in zone coverage. You think the communication has been tremendous.
Right. Communication and seeing the route the same, because a lot of times you have to have nonverbal communication when you consider, you know, sometimes you can't hear and you're talking about the left corner, you know, understanding, seeing what the right corner is doing and being on a string. And they're on a string right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, to go back to what you were saying before, how I would defend Diggs, if he's on the outside, I'm fine. But if they hide him in a slot against Michael Carter, even though I love Michael Carter, the double will be on. And the double will be on either by the backside safety. Mm-hmm. The backside safety will have an opportunity that if he runs any of those dig routes, that you come down what we call radar. You come down and you take it because the quarterback will never see it because he's reading left to right. He'll never see the right safety if he's running a dig coming down from here. And it's going to look like Michael Carter's beat because he's going to have to stay on the backside of him in case he ever runs a yo-yo route and comes back. He's always in good position knowing that front side, he has the front side safety coming down. If he's on the outside, it's fine. I got tremendous belief that Reed and Sauce can get her done.
Yeah.
But if he's in a slot, I'm going to double him because he's in a slot for a reason. So when he goes in the slot, I'm going to double him because I got a great belief that the ball's going to go to him and now I can put two on him, tip balls, change games.
So Stephon Diggs is a router. So if he's on the outside against, you know, Sauce or DJ, like he's a great route runner. But routes take time.
Yep.
So if you can disrupt the timing by just getting moving Josh or getting a hand on or anything, that takes his eyes off for a second. Diggs, who's working his double move, his stutter and go, whatever it is. Like he's excellent at changing directions and changing speeds. But the way that you counter that is with your rush.
Massive game for both teams. Great job from you fellas, as always. See you soon.
Jets fans, we're in our final push and the clock is ticking. WynnBET is giving you a golden opportunity to win VIP prizes for the 2023 season. The WynnBET Green Room is the most exclusive space at the stadium with all-inclusive food and beverage, lower-level seats, and appearances by Jets legends and celebrities. New Jersey customers, all you need to do is wager at least $100 on WynnBET Sportsbook or Casino. For New York customers, all you need to do is wager at least $100 on WynnBET's Sportsbook. The best part? You get an entry for every $100 you wager.
The official Jets podcast is presented by WynnBET. Betting is a team sport, but together at WynnBET. Eric Allen here in the Audi Performance Studio, joined by Chris Long. Chris, thank you so much for taking some time out to talk to us about the Jets and what's ahead for the green and white. First off, what's your takeaway on the Jets season to date?
My big takeaway is obviously it's a challenge because you have Aaron Rodgers signed up. Obviously, the injury happens right away. I really had high hopes for the team. I still do. I had picked him to go to the Super Bowl with Aaron on the roster healthy, but that all changed. I think the big thing that I think it's obvious to some people, but the team is built for Aaron. You know, it's built with a coordinator that Aaron brings in, Nathaniel Hackett, who's a good coach in his own right, but that relationship was important. A lot of the concepts out of the gate are designed more for Aaron, and when you have to make that change, it is a big adjustment. But I think I've seen some exciting moments from this team where they figure out how to win games. You know, Zach's figured out at times how to string together, you know, these improbable heroic drives. I think the team at different points, like you could tell the Buffalo game, you talk to Jets fans, they're like, oh, in the past, we don't have that big play on special teams. You know, we go to overtime and maybe something goes wrong. And so you could sense a little bit of magic, but now they're kind of getting tested a little bit. And I think that defense just got to hang in there. You know, I've been on defenses where the offense is trying to work things out. It can be stressful for the entire group. But I think Saleh's a great leader. And I think they got veterans in that locker room that'll keep them together through this rough stretch.
Speaking of rough stretches, your podcast, the Greenlight Podcast, talks about what the Buffalo Bills are going through right now. What do you think about what's on the horizon for both of these teams who are looking to halt a two-game losing streak against each other there, which, frankly, a lot of people are looking at this game, Chris, as it's an elimination game or a battle of survival.
Yeah, it's a back-against-the-wall game for sure for both teams, you know. I think for the Bills, with the expectations they had, I think once Aaron got hurt, people looked at the Jets as, you know, like this could be a great story. You know, these guys having an opportunity to do something nobody believes in them doing. And I still think those things are out there for them. But for the Bills, with Super Bowl aspirations, with that quarterback under center, this is supposed to be a big year for them. And I think the Miami game going up, you know, winning 48-20, at their place, you're thinking this is like, I remember for 2 weeks, we were like, this is a Super Bowl favorite. But that's the ebb and flow of the NFL season. And I think it is a back against the wall game, but it's also a game that's exciting for the Bills because, you know, you do have that. It sucks to lose a coordinator, to fire a coordinator. Nobody likes to do that. That's a stressful time in a facility, but Joe Brady's seen some ball. You know, that run at LSU was amazing. And then I think in Carolina, I would grade him incomplete because the Matt Rhule thing didn't really work out. I don't think he had the same type of weapons at his disposal. So I think for Buffalo, they're going to want to say, hey, we can restart right here, you know. And for the Jets, every week is back against the wall. Implicitly, when you are rolling with the number two option at quarterback, and I know it's been a long time, but every week it feels like back against the wall. And that's exciting. and stressful, but you want to get some breathing room so you can kind of – you want to pick this one up if you can.
In today's modern age of football, how unique is this Jets defense in terms of what they're bringing at you at all three levels?
Yeah, I think when you have young corners like, you know, gets a lot of attention, he should. That guy's – awesome. But there's other guys back there who can really play. And I'm a big fan of the linebacking core. You know, again, it's like last year, we're paying a lot of attention to Williams up front, but then he's got a brother that can really play. And sometimes I can't take my eyes off him, and I can't take my eyes off the defensive line. Like, I could name them all, but I don't want to give anybody more credit than the others because I've been on groups like this where you just roll bodies. Like Bryce Huff, for instance, not a guy that gets a lot of credit. One of my favorite players in the league to watch. You talk about his pressure percentage, things that go unnoticed sometimes by fans, win rate. That stuff's legit. You know, it's he should be proud of those metrics because this guy doesn't get a lot of attention, but he's one of my favorite rushers in the league. Talk about John Franklin Myers, his versatility. Jermaine's coming on. They just have guys that come at you in waves, and I think that's a familiar feeling for me being in a group like that. So it's exciting to watch. But they have playmakers at every level of defense, and like I said, they do a lot in some disadvantageous situations, which I think like sometimes when you're weighing the best defenses in ball. Look at how good the complimentary football is for, say, the Ravens most weeks, if they're not turning the ball over, or the Chiefs most weeks. Some of these defenses that get talked about in that light, the Jets are often in situations that you don't want to be in, and they make other quarterbacks look bad despite it, and they keep the points down despite it. So I really just respect the group, and I love that they have playmakers at every level of defense, some that don't get talked about.
You did this at such a high level. You won a couple rings. You mentioned Huff. You said he's one of your favorite guys in the entire league to watch. As a guy who played on the outside, what do you like most about his game?
He's unique. You know, his leverage is incredible. Like when he runs the hoop, he can get on under somebody's arm and he's running that tight hoop. He's got that really good low center of gravity and the ability to turn his hips quickly and win at the top. So I also think he's just got a good feel. Like the guy's got a lot of tools in his toolbox. I like seeing rushers that can, you know, that kind of, they don't guess, you know, he's feeling the down, you know, as he goes. And I know that he probably saves up a home run or two and he's premeditated a move or two, but I just feel like he's the type of guy that comes out there and lets it rip and has a bunch of tools in the toolbox and understands leverage and timing and power, you know, like he's just fun to watch that way where he's not prototypically gifted, but he's gifted in a really, you know, under the radar way that some fans might not pick up on. I just love watching him play. He wins a lot of rushes. You don't see him just getting blocked. And that's right. One of my favorite things. Guys who are active, guys who have high batting percentages, so to speak, out there on the edge.
What do you think about Jermaine and the way he's taking advantage of those opportunities here in year two? And also when you watch him, we know he's not a finished product, Jermaine Johnson, a former first round pick, but what's next for him?
I think what's next for him is just continued growth and, you know, steady that build of confidence. You know, I think it's a challenge to be a first round pick, but it's also a challenge to be a first round pick and walk into a defense that's got a bunch of guys that are going to eat. And, you know, there's a positive to it, which I'm sure he sounds like a great guy, you know, talking to Joe Douglas and all that stuff, where he's not selfish. And, you know, but the pressure on you as a first-round pick to produce in a room where there's only so many buckets to go around is tough, because people might look up and say, hey, you're not a 10-sack guy. Well, there's a lot of mouths to feed in that D-line room. And I think he's done a good job of progressing as his career's gone on. But also, like, he started to, I think, feel a knack for when to make a big play. You know, that's a thing that comes with confidence and it comes with experience. And I think he's a rep guy. You can tell he's a worker. So the more reps he's going to get, the more his game's going to elevate. I'm excited to watch.
JFM, how much do you appreciate his versatility? Because he can beat you on the outside. They can shift him inside. And you can take advantage of that guard.
That's my favorite thing about him. I don't think enough teams, and I had mentioned this early in the season, because, you know, you guys are really evenly distributed in skill. As in, hey, there's no one guy on the outside, although I'm a big Bryce Huff fan, but there's no, like, Von Miller in his prime guy that people are like, hey, we got to pay all this attention to him. And sometimes when you have an advantage out there, or when the moment's right, and that's based on a lot of factors in a game, and in a situation, but like, I like putting a big guy outside that can dent the pocket, that can get that, like when they'll put a Fletcher Cox sometimes outside in Philly. Chris Jones is somebody who famously will go outside and tackles are like, what the hell's this? I don't want to deal with this. I think it's the same thing with John Franklin Myers when you move him around. And I like power rushers. I like guys. But he's also got some really good wiggle on the edge. And he's got good hands. He's one of my favorite guys to watch as well. They really do have a good, versatile, unselfish group.
Quinnen doesn't have the sack numbers, but everybody inside the building and anybody who watches the tape says, this guy is as disruptive as ever. Can you talk about Quinnen and the challenge, I guess, for you guys as professionals, as somebody battled in between the white lines, is that those sack numbers aren't coming, but you know you are helping your team win because you're getting double team or you're getting triple team and you're freeing guys up and creating those one-on-ones. And you all, oh, by the way, are still creating pressure yourself.
I think it's really important for people to realize that sack number is not everything. I mean, it's definitely something that's an indicator, but a lot of times we don't know what it's indicating. I mean, you know, some of the best games I played in, I had, you know, half sack or no sacks and 6-7 pressures, 4 hits, you know, maybe causing interceptions. Like, that's the stuff that we pride ourselves on that maybe fans walking out of the stadium looking at the box score don't say, hey, that guy was a terror today. One of my least favorite things to hear somebody say or read online or that sort of thing is, haven't heard his name called all day long. Well, there might be a couple of reasons. Number one, maybe he's affecting other people being able to make plays. Maybe they're actively trying to take him out of the ball game. Maybe the quarterback's speeding the clock up. Time to throw is variable every week, every matchup, and oftentimes it works against you when you're a good player and you've got a good group up front. And also, maybe you're not watching close enough. Because most people, myself included, when I sit down to watch a game, I'm watching the ball. And then I'll, you know, get on the replay, watch the All-22 and that sort of thing. Most people aren't diving into that tape. And so I think, if I'm honest, until I get into my All-22 during the week, I don't know if you'd have said, hey, how did Calais Campbell play this week? Well, I've watched the Arizona offense. I've watched the Atlanta defense. I've watched the All-22. But then there's another layer of going back and watching each player. And most people aren't doing that. So I trust the people in the building. And I also trust my eyes when I see a guy who's still a wrecking ball out there. And so as a player, the only thing that matters is honestly the perception of your teammates when you turn that film on Mondays. And if you're doing your job, they're going to see that. And they appreciate it already. That guy can play. I think sometimes the production can spike on a guy in a single year. And it's not representative of maybe where he's going to be every year. But I think if you're paying attention to him, you know, the difference between him last year and this year is not some astronomical thing. It's just things aren't sometimes breaking right. And, you know, sack is the funniest damn stat in football because it's so dependent on everything else.
CJ Mosley, he just reached 1,000 tackles. Talk about something that flies under the radar. He had 14 tackles against the Raiders. That's the sixth time in his career he's reached that number. But he doesn't seem to have any drop-off when you're talking about a linebacker in his early 30s. How much do you appreciate what he still is at this point in his career?
I mean, I really appreciate it because I know how hard it is to be 30 in the NFL and play that physical. He's playing really physical, making a ton of stops, tackles every week. He's done that his whole career. Also, the pressure of being a guy that, you know, you guys are asking a lot of, I think, you know, from a financial standpoint, he's been rewarded up there. And with that comes pressure. And, you know, I think he's dealt with the pressure nicely. And he seems to be a guy that teammates love. He seems to be a guy that just busts his butt every day. And anytime you watch the football, it's him and Williams around the ball. I mean, it's high energy. It's like these guys, for teams that have these offensive lulls where the offense isn't playing great and the mood might get down on the sideline. It's like, oh, another three and out or oh, pick. And by the way, I think the offense is doing a nice job picking up Zach. I've seen a lot of indications that those guys are, even in his worst moments, like I have a picture of Lazard coming over to console him after he fumbled that ball. It's a mistake you don't want to make, but you can see that nobody wants to make that mistake. Zach doesn't want to make that mistake. The mood can still get down sometimes, and I think having defensive players that are not only great players but high energy, they're like tone setters, you know, celebrate big plays. No matter what the score is, no matter how the game's going, hype each other up, finish on the football. That's kind of what I see when I watch the Jets defense on the second level.
So I know this is something you're going to appreciate. Salah always talks about the back end and the front end being connected. And that quarterback, if he has to hitch one more time, that's going to give us an opportunity to get there up front. With that being said, those three cornerbacks, when you're throwing out Sauce Gardner, DJ Reed, and then Michael Carter, the second at the nickel spot, how much do they complete this unit?
Well, it's big because, you know, like I said earlier, everybody's talking about Sauce. Nobody talks about Reed, really. You know, having those guys on the back end and having a nickel who can play at a high level is a huge – it's almost a necessity. It's not a luxury anymore. Like, if you want to go anywhere, you got to have a ton of cover guys back there. I'll give you an example. Like, San Francisco, when they struggled with Cincinnati a couple weeks ago, you could kind of see that coming. Now, they've made some changes on the back end in San Francisco, working, I think it was Ambry Thomas in a little bit more, and you put Lenore inside, like, so shuffling of pieces. But when you play Cincinnati and Higgins is healthy, you got three really great receivers or good receivers, right, that you're going to have to contend with. If you don't have that third guy that can cover, you're in trouble in today's NFL. Because when you see the best teams, they have three options, most of them, that they can hit. Now, Kansas City is different this year, that sort of thing. But year in and year out, if you want to go somewhere, you got to have at least three guys back there that can cover at a high level, and especially the nickel position, because the game's changed to where that's a necessity, as I said, and not a luxury. So for linemen, I'd love to play for the Jets, you know, like – the fractions of time, that's what we used to talk about. You alluded to it. The difference between Quinn and Williams being the thing everybody talks about on a Monday morning versus the, you know, hey, I didn't hear his name, is one more pat. You know, or it's schematically playing more aggressively on the back end, or it's a reroute. It's all this little stuff that goes into team defense. And so I think having that back end is like a defensive line's best friend.
Offensively, what do you think is next for the Jets? They're playing a Bills unit that's been decimated by injuries here, but the Jets, we know about their offensive struggles as far as getting the ball in the end zone. I think it's 8 offensive touchdowns in 9 games. With that being said, Chris, there were a lot of encouraging aspects of that game against the Raiders, but this team just has to find a way to finish.
They do. They have to find a way to finish drives, man. And that's the hard thing when you're not really that explosive. I mean, Garrett's awesome. They found a way to get him some chunk plays at times. I know he had a couple the other night, but, like, you know, the longer a drive, Zach has to be patient, you know. It's the same thing we're talking about with Josh. Mm. You know, it's like, hey, just extend the length of these drives. Eventually these guys might get impatient. I know that's what made Zach great at BYU is his aggressiveness and all that stuff. But I think it's the staying on the details throughout the course of the entire drive, whether it's a choice route, which way am I going? Where am I supposed to sit down here? Because sometimes it's on the receivers, not the quarterback. And for Zach, it's like, do I need to drop the arm angle here? You know, maybe I just need to stick to my fundamentals in this situation. But I think more than anything, you play in Buffalo. You have not played Buffalo since they looked this way defensively. And, I mean, like, Ken Dorsey's getting a lot of attention right now. The Bills offense, what's going on with that? But the defense, although they've hung in there, they're down some guys. I mean, Matt Milano, one of my favorite players in the league, that guy is a nightmare. And when you talk about having your best player in the backfield there, one of them, in Breece Hall, you know, the second level of defense is going to look different than it used to. I mean, the first time you played the Bills, they're down a stud up front inside. So can the run game get going? I think it's just all about patience with these guys and then cashing in when you get in the red zone, when you get in plus territory, taking care of the football. Because teams are going to naturally make you drive the football and expect Zach to make a mistake. And I think that's on him to just eliminate that stuff and lean into getting your best players the ball as easily as you can. Easy touches for these guys. That's the best thing you got going for you, right? Those two guys I mentioned, Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, studs. Offensive line, banged up a little bit, not playing so well. Get these guys the ball quickly in space. Nathaniel Hackett's got to find a way to do that.
You started out here talking about Aaron Rodgers. You've competed against him. What do you make about the way he's attacked his recovery? And also, what are your expectations for him? Not necessarily in 2023, but whenever he returns to the field.
I think he's still going to be really good when he comes back. I mean, it's the reason I believed in the Jets this year. Still do because of that defense, but I just thought Aaron – might be the icing on the cake that could get you guys to the next level. Obviously, you probably have to wait till next year for that. Now, I don't know. He might be superhuman. I don't know. If he comes back, I mean, hats off. But I just, you know, especially the way it's kind of been behind under center, you know, from a protection standpoint and that sort of thing, like if he's going to come back this year, it'd be a miracle first off. And then on top of that, you'd have to go really navigate the pocket well with whatever you're dealing with. So I just think it's one of those things, whether it's Zach or whether at some point you're mixing somebody else in, you got to ride with what you got. And you got to think about next year, but it can't creep into people's heads. You know, it's like, that's going to be awesome when he does come back. But right now we got to win with this group, you know? And those two things could be true. You can make a run with this group. And then when Aaron walks back in the door, man, it's go time. Cause I think he's still got it. A lot of people were down on his play at the end of the road there in Green Bay, but I see the ball come off his hands. I mean, it looks a lot different than I watched every game every Sunday. I don't see the ball coming off a lot of guys' hands like even with Aaron and even at the end of his run in Green Bay. So I'm excited to see him get back if that's what he's going to do, whether it's, you know, Super Bowl or next year.
I want to speak to you quickly about Joe Douglas. He's the guy that you have a relationship with. Personally, from a professional perspective, what do you think about the way he's attacked this roster? And also, give us some insight what it was like for you as a player working with Joe behind the scenes.
Well, first off, I owe Joe a whole lot. I absolutely love the dude. He, when I was done in New England – and I, you know, like I decided I want to walk and be a free agent, which most people, when you walk out of New England, they're like, something's wrong with you. And no, it wasn't that. I just wanted to play, finish my career in a system that was more suited to do what I was doing. Because I was trying to come back from 2 years of IR, getting cut in St. Louis. You know, I wanted to finish my career looking like me at some point. You know, that was just an uphill battle for a couple years. And to come off of New England, I'm playing in a three technique. I'm playing right end up there. It just was awkward. I wasn't proud of that tape as much as honestly I was of my Philly tape. And I really appreciate Joe for giving me the opportunity to put that on tape. you know, and Howie and I talked and stuff, but it was Joe that like kind of cleared that deal. Cause Ian Cunningham is in Chicago right now, was one of my teammates in college. He's up there with Ryan Poles, but I called Ian actually. And I was like, hey, you guys think you'd have room for like an older guy? And he was like, let me run it up the flagpole with Joe. And Joe was like, hell yeah, that'd be awesome. And they made it happen. So I really appreciate Joe. If it's not for Joe, my life's totally different right now. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when it comes to how he operates in the building, he's not one of those guys that when you see him walking down the hall, you're like, oh, Joe's here. You know, the GM's here, or the guy from upstairs is here. Like, he's a football player. You know, he played ball. He could still probably play ball. I see him out there. I mean, he looks like he could probably pancake me, you know, get up on the second level, get the safety. Joe's a beast. So we identify with him. He treats us like, you know, we're equals. You know, it's a tough business. He's got to cut guys. He used to be the Grim Reaper in Baltimore when they first had Hard Knocks back there. He was the guy that was going to get guys playbooks before they were coming to get iPads. But Joe is like, he does it with grace. I mean, he really is a class act and cares about all the players that he drafts, that he acquires, and the ones that he has to cut and trade. And I think that's why guys love Joe. And I obviously likes the big guys, likes the linemen. I think the Philly year, he had a lot to do with that. Bringing in LeGarrette, him and Howie, working magic, LeGarrette, Patrick Robinson. I think he values vets, you know, myself, Torrey Smith, and investing in that D-line, because that literally was how we won that Super Bowl. Well, the offense was pretty darn good. It's not like we held Tom Brady down. It was 41-33. But there were a lot of games we won because we were deep up front on both sides of the ball. And I think he wants to build a team the same way. And you can see it coming to fruition with the D-line. Now we just got to get the other side of the ball going.
Hey, Chris, really appreciate your time today. Know you're busy being a dad. Also, the Green Light podcast.
Yes, sir.
And I know you've done tremendous things with Water Boys throughout the year. I mean, over the years. I mean, just incredible as far as using your platform to help other people. So, man, keep it up, because I don't know how you have that kind of time in your day, but you've always done a great job.
I'm trying, man. Yeah, I don't sleep a lot, so. I'm up watching the Cardinals at 2 a.m. last night. What am I doing? I'm addicted to football. You guys, good luck the rest of the way.